Hello and welcome to Beyond Approach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
And I'm Tux Lerzel.
We come to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn, where we record on land belonging to the Lenape Nation, a nation that is one of many still very much out here doing its thing. And we'd like to acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. This is the show about scandals and scandalousness in American politics and government.
Facts are facts, America.
We be drinking, we be swear... Drinking? What?
Excuse... Record scratch.
Oh my God.
What?
Who said that? Skirt. That person sounds dumb.
They sound like they spell potato with an E.
We be drinking and we be swearing.
Amazing.
Potato with an E.
Wow. Today, I can't believe I'm about to say this. Take a deep breath, everyone. Yeah. Are you sitting down?
Sit down.
We are drinking Long Island iced teas.
We are 19 years old.
That we are.
We have our first fake ID. Mm-hmm. We're from Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When people ask our zip code, we get flustered and we run. That happened to me.
Really? Amazing.
I took my ID from his hand and I just walked away.
I like that you took it first, though. You're like, this is mine.
I just had to go home and Google it, you know, and then I'd be good next time.
Amazing. So, yeah, we are drinking Long Island iced teas. My story today is from the early 1990s, 1992 to be specific. If you listen to our last episode, you will already know that.
Yes.
Stephanie's story was from 1992, and I don't know how this happened, but so is mine.
Yeah.
We like to keep our stories a secret from one another.
It's like hive mind sort of thing that's happening right now.
We like to keep our stories a secret from one another, but we have to tell each other a little bit of detail, A, to make sure we're not telling the same story twice.
B, which almost happened once.
It did almost happen with the...
Jumbo.
Yeah, LBJ's Jumbo Johnson.
I was so happy that you did that scandal and I didn't have to care about him.
But also, I have to know at least like an era to pick a cocktail. Mm. And when Stephanie told me her story was from 1992, I was like, excuse me? 1992, you said?
Yeah, I was so afraid that you had my scandal. I'm like, Dan Quayle is mine.
No. Nope.
He's mine.
Step away from the Quayle. I'm not doing Dan Quayle. Totally different story, but also from 1992. So I had to find yet another cocktail that would have been popular in the early 1990s. In the 90s, there was sort of a bit of a shift in cocktail culture, sort of a cultural explosion within cocktail culture. Like in the 90s, cocktail culture as we know it today, that's when it first started to come back. After like it was decimated after Prohibition, never really came back, and it didn't start until the 90s. Unfortunately for me, it didn't happen until later in the decade.
Yeah.
The very, very beginnings of this was like 96-ish. And since we're drinking cocktails from 1992, basically in the early 90s, we were still drinking the stuff that we were drinking in the 80s. And you guys know how much I love a cocktail from the 80s. And by love, I mean hate. So I had to think about, okay, what am I going to do? What are we going to drink? Where is my story set? Who does it involve? And I ultimately decided that the Long Island iced tea was very, very appropriate for the story I'm about to tell. The Long Island iced tea was created in 1972.
Kansas?
Nope.
Okay.
In Long Island. Imagine that. It was created in 1972 by a bartender named Robert Butt. That is correct.
This world isn't real.
His name is Bob Butt.
Oh, no.
He goes by Robert, though, because Bob Butt would, just be too much. He invented it at the Oak Beach Inn in Long Island, New York.
Butt with two T's?
Yes.
No.
Absolutely. B-U-T-T.
Okay.
And he is a realtor. So he was working at the Oak Beach Inn in Long Island, New York, and entered a cocktail making contest and was tasked with coming up with a cocktail that included triple sec liqueur.
Okay.
This is a direct quote from Mr. Butt. The world famous Long Island iced tea was first invented in 1972 by me, Robert Butt.
Oh, you don't need to give your whole name.
I know. While I was tending bar at the infamous Oak Beach Inn, I participated in a cocktail creating contest. Triple sec had to be included, and the bottles started flying. My concoction was an almost immediate hit and quickly became the house drink at the Oak Beach Inn. By the mid-1970s, every bar on Long Island was serving up this innocent-looking cocktail, and by the 80s, it was known the world over.
Okay, but.
Does he sound like the biggest turd?
He sounds like a butt.
Yeah, totally. So there were some other similar cocktails that were created before 1972 that were sort of vaguely similar. One that was created in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. You know, the inventor of that cocktail tries to claim that he invented the Lioness tea. I don't believe that they're related because in the 70s, this other cocktail was not very popular, not very well known. And when Mr. Butt had to create this cocktail for a contest, I don't think that he would have ever heard of this other cocktail. So it really seems to me like he just kind of came up with this independently on his own. And I'm inclined to believe that because a Long Island iced tea kind of just feels like the kind of a drink that a white dude from Long Island would come up with.
Yeah, totally.
It's the kind of thing that you would mix together from your parents' liquor cabinet if you didn't want them to know you took anything, so you just took a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
If you look at this cocktail on paper, it looks a hot mess. It doesn't look like it should taste good together. It has four completely different liquors in it and a liqueur. Vodka, gin, rum, tequila, and triple sec.
Sounds like such a dangerous thing to totally. Do to yourself.
And they're all in exactly identical amounts, topped off with lemon juice and cola. Like, why? What? Yeah. Who? What? Why would you think to do this? It really sounds like it wouldn't work together at all. Like it would be disgusting. But somehow it actually works. It actually does kind of taste all right.
It tastes like nothing.
Yeah. It is obviously boozy as fuck.
Yeah, I'm scared, you guys. I know. Hold me.
Which is probably why it took off and became this almost like instant classic. Because it's sweet. It's strong, but it doesn't taste strong.
It is not super sweet.
It may also have taken off because it's so easy to remember the recipe and so easy to make because everything is in the exact same ingredients. Everything except for the cola that you add at the top. Yeah. Either way, young people love a Long Island iced tea, especially young men love a Long Island iced tea. I myself have gotten into quite a bit of trouble after drinking these in college one night. We'll leave it at that. The end.
I feel like everyone's gotten in trouble because you don't have one.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
So the only real difference between the Long Island iced teas that we are drinking today and the ones that would have been sold in bars in the 1990s is that we made ours with fresh lemon juice and simple syrup, while most bars in the 90s would have been using sour mix. And the other difference is that we have scaled the recipe back because when you order these in a bar, they come in a pint glass. And we are not drinking pints of straight liquor today.
On a Sunday?
No.
Evening?
Yeah. No. So these are, I think, 10-ounce glasses that we have before us.
I'm still looking at this glass very suspiciously.
As you should.
What you gonna do?
That's the story of the Long Island iced tea. Hold on to your butts.
Yeah.
Cheers.
I'm scared.
Let's take a little taste of this concoction.
I have not had this drink in a decade. Cheers.
Cheers.
When I was a kid at school learning the golden rule, teacher often used to say, if you don't tell a lie, there's not a reason why you can't be like Washington someday. How could Washington be a married man and never, never tell a lie?
Tastes like juice.
It tastes like nothing.
This
it tastes
is
like
really
juice.
Whoa, that scares me again.
It doesn't taste strong at all. Like, you can't taste alcohol
this
at all.
This drink should be illegal.
It literally should.
If you are over 35, they should take your order and then slap your hand. Wow. Tastes like nothing.
This story is not... It was not fun to research. It's not fun knowing that this happened, but I think that we're going to have some fun with it. A, because we're drinking Long Island iced teas, but B, because there's a lot of people to make fun of in this story. I am going to be talking about one of the largest violent demonstration in New York City's history, the City Hall Riot. This is a story that every American should know, but it's basically been scrubbed from our collective historical memory. Even though this is set in New York City, everyone in America should know this because it sort of launched the career of a politician that we all know and love.
Rudy? No, Rudy.
So the reason that this particular demonstration stands out is that unlike most of the protests that were happening at the time, even the protests that we saw happening last summer, actually, the protesters in this case were not people of color. They were New York's finest.
Oh.
Yes. So David Dinkins was New York City's first and only black mayor until Eric Adams took office on January 1st this year. In 1992, Mayor Dinkins suggested creating an independent civilian review board to monitor allegations of police misconduct.
What?
And the NYPD collectively lost their fucking shit.
They're like, misconduct? The thing that we do all the time?
What else are we supposed to do with ourselves every day?
How dare you?
Yeah. So they all started whining about the oppression of being held accountable for their own actions. And 10,000 off-duty cops took to the streets in protest. And that protest quickly devolved into a violent, destructive, and openly racist riot through the streets of Lower Manhattan. And after living in the city for 15 years, I have never once heard the story of the City Hall riot. Never once.
Just hearing you describe it sounds like something that would totally happen. That could happen right now.
Absolutely, yeah. But nobody ever talks about it. I don't know why. But that changes today. I'm about to talk about it. But before we get any further, I would like to propose a toast. This is a very simple and elegant toast today.
Ooh. To New York's finest.
Yes, to raise a glass. Fuck the police.
A toast that I love. A toast very near and dear to my heart.
Yes.
I want this on my tombstone.
So I can't really explain the mood in this country in the early 1990s without first talking a little bit about Rodney King. This really absolutely deserves its own episode. We need to talk about this story at some point soon, and hopefully we will.
Yeah.
Maybe not in this season, but at some point we will definitely talk about this. But for now, today, all I'm really going to say is that the reason what happened to Rodney King was so significant was that in a time before smartphones, some dude just happened to look out the window, see what was going on, and bust out his giant clunky-ass 1990s camcorder.
Yeah.
And record
what the police has been doing since their inception.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. The police were violently beating the shit out of this man, and this man caught them on tape. Mm. If there weren't video of this, these officers never would have even gone to trial. But they did. But unsurprisingly, there was some fuckery going on, and all of the officers were acquitted, which sparked the LA riots in the spring of 1992. I recently watched a documentary called LA 92. Mm. It's incredible. Everyone needs to watch this documentary on the LA riots. I really had no idea. I've heard of them for sure, but I didn't realize everything that...
We were children.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I remember Rodney King.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that for the first time and being like, what? Yeah.
Russell remembers the LA riots really very, very well because he was a kid and like his family, they like fled.
Of course.
Yeah.
They had means and they're white.
Yeah. But he remembers like being a kid and watching TV and recognizing the places that this was happening and being like... terrified out of his mind as a little boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So over the course of 3 days, more than 3,000 buildings burned down, more than 60 people were killed, and almost 2,000 people were injured. And it all happened because the black people of Los Angeles were sick and fucking tired of being terrorized by a corrupt and out of control police force.
Yeah.
So that was sort of at the top of everyone's mind in 1992 that was going on. But also back in New York City, in August of 1991, a riot had broken out between the black and Hasidic Jewish communities in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, because a young black child had been killed and another was very badly injured by a car accident involving a prominent rabbi's motorcade. And it took days for the violence to subside. And when it was finally over, two more people had been killed. In July of 1992, a police officer named Michael O'Keefe shot and killed a 22-year-old man named Jose Kiko Garcia in Washington Heights. O'Keefe tried to claim that Garcia had had a gun and that he had to shoot him in self-defense.
He was afraid.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
So afraid.
Witnesses say that there was no gun, that this was not true. In the riots over the following days, one man died and at least 15 people were reported injured.
It depends what you mean by true.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. In an attempt to defuse this situation, Mayor Dinkins, he visited the Garcia family in Washington Heights. And a few days later, he invited the Garcias to Gracie Mansion, which really, really pissed off the NYPD, who started saying that David Dinkins had more sympathy for criminals than he did for them. Mm. So this was what was happening in 1992. There were demonstrations for racial justice across the country, nationwide.
Yeah.
And there was also huge allegations of rampant corruption within the NYPD, not just the LAPD, but the NYPD too. So
I think all the PDs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
So Mayor Dinkins in 1992 appointed a mayoral commission to investigate charges of police corruption. Uh-oh. And also started pushing to change the makeup of the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which examined complaints of police misconduct. At the time, it was made up of, this review board was made up of half cops and half civilians. And
what?
It was a branch of the NYPD.
Excuse me?
Yes. They're going to investigate themselves.
That's hilarious.
Yes. So he was pushing to make it an all-civilian review board that would be completely independent of the NYPD.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah, exactly. Activists in New York had been pushing to make this an independent all-civilian review board since the 1940s.
I mean, it's called a civilian review board.
Literally, yes.
What?
It had half civilians on it. It's the same thing.
That's so fucked up, but yeah. Like that makes all the sense.
Yeah. So now that the mayor was actually pushing for this, the NYPD were fucking losing their shit. They couldn't handle this. Oversight and accountability?
What?
In this economy?
Yes. Could you imagine if they had to get like insurance?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah.
Like, well, if you hurt someone,
the amount of lawsuits that they're constantly paying already.
They would be out of jobs probably that year.
In an instant. Yeah. So they were obviously furious at Mayor Dinkins. They were also really pissed because they claimed that the criminals in the streets had more firepower than they did. And they were pushing to be issued semi-automatic pistols. Mm. And Mayor Dinkins was like, excuse me, what? You want me to give you semi-automatic weapons to go out in these streets and murder people? What the fuck
is wrong
with
you? I mean, that's why they joined the police force.
Yeah, I know.
They're like, can we get tanks? Because, like, we just need to patrol.
This was at a time before the full militarization of police across the nation. It was just the beginning, and they really wanted to ramp it up. And he was like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. So they were furious with him. And to show the mayor just how they felt, the Police Benevolent Association, or PBA, organized a protest outside City Hall. So on September 16th, 1992, off-duty officers started showing up by the thousands around 10 a.m., they quickly filled the park around City Hall and started spilling out into the side streets. They also had a permit to take over Murray Street, which runs perpendicular to City Hall. And Murray Street also just happens to be filled with Irish pubs.
Mm.
So almost immediately, the streets were filled with beer-guzzling off-duty cops in jeans and t-shirts. Cans and bottles just everywhere, all over the place. Because apparently open container laws don't matter if you are the law. If you're above
law?
The law.
I mean, they are above the law.
Yeah,
they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah, they can shoot children and walk away, go home and kiss their kids. Mm-hmm.
In the crowd, which shockingly was almost exclusively white men.
What?
You don't fucking say.
I'm glad I'm seated.
Can you believe it?
I'm trying to come to terms with it.
The crowd was filled with t-shirts saying, Dinkins must go, and hundreds of banners and hand-painted signs with slogans like, Dear Mayor, have you hugged a drug dealer today?
Cute.
Dinkins, we know your true color, yellow-bellied.
Come on.
You could do better.
That was the first draft.
Some signs just called the city's first black mayor a washroom attendant. And others just resorted to racist cartoons of Dinkins with big lips and an afro. Mm,
yes.
No big deal.
Classic.
Very original. Yeah.
I mean, it's an oldie. It's their goodie.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not surprised by any of
this.
Again, we could see this right now.
Exactly. I'm doing this story because it feels so current, even though it was 30 years ago.
All the progress we've made, I know. According to Quayle, we've faced racism squarely.
Yeah.
Those were his terms
before this.
I know, yes.
So for blocks around City Hall on this day, you could hear chants of Dinkins gotta go, no justice, no police, and the mayor's on crack.
Yes.
Just a bunch of white drunken bros. The mayor's on crack. The mayor's on crack.
They probably thought they were so clever. Yeah. We got him. Zing. They're just so not clever. No. That like upsets me the most a little.
You can do better than this. You're better than this.
You're not better than this. But it's like they just want to say the N-word. Exactly. It's just like, just write that on a shirt.
Oh, they did.
Okay.
They absolutely did.
Be yourself. Yeah. Don't censor yourself. And like, say it with your fucking chest like a man. Be an adult.
Grow up. Don't
use your words. These
like secret hand signals.
Oh, yeah. Like, they're just so scared. Yeah. I kind of love how scared they are. But it's like, you are the power structure. You shouldn't be scared.
I know. What are you afraid of?
Yeah.
So while this is all going on, a black city councilwoman named Una Clark was trying to get into work that day and was blocked from crossing Broadway on her way into City Hall by, quote, a beer-drinking, off-duty police officer who said to his sidekick, this N-word says she's a member of the city council. Like he couldn't believe a black person had a job in government. The N-word features very heavily in my story today. I will not be saying the actual word, but please keep in mind that they were not saying N-word. They were using the actual word.
They were saying with a hard R.
Yes, exactly. And even the reporting in the newspaper reports, never once did anyone write N-word.
No.
Yeah, they were saying the actual word. So on Murray Street, the PBA president, Phil Caruso, decided he was going to kick things off with a nice little speech against Dinkins. Mm. But there was no stage. There was no sound system or anything. So he just climbed up on top of a car and he had a megaphone and just started shouting about how much he fucking hated Dinkins. And everyone was like, yeah, fuck that dude. Washroom attendant.
He wasn't even born here.
I saw his birth certificate. He's from Kenya. Oh my God.
History repeating itself over and over again.
Over and over. Yeah.
This simulation is broken.
Seriously.
Can I get out? Over.
So then the next speaker that they brought up was Officer O'Keefe, who was just exonerated from the killing of Jose Garcia in Washington Heights. He climbed up on this random ass parked car and was hailed as a hero by the crowd.
Es. You got away with it.
Yeah,
yay!
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, apparently there was some like 45-page report about what happened that basically contradicted every single thing that he said about
it. Doesn't matter. He's a cop.
Yeah, he got off.
They're above the law.
But the main speaker this day was a certain Italian-American goblin named Rudolph Giuliani. Mm. So for a little bit of a background on old Rooters.
I call him Caludi. Yes, Giuliani.
Yes. Before this happened, old Caludi had ran against Dinkins for mayor in 1989 and lost.
Oh, shit.
Yes. So he was not
his
pleased.
Feelings.
Exactly. Yeah. He lost to a black man.
Ooh.
In 1989.
Ooh, wow.
It stings.
That explains a lot.
I know.
That explains everything, actually.
So he shouted through the megaphone, the reason the morale of the police department of the city of New York is so low is one reason and one reason alone. David Dinkins. And the crowd went wild. Yep. Some officers even started throwing their empty beer cans at City Hall.
What?
Yes. The New York Times wrote, beer cans and broken bottles littered the streets as Mr. Giuliani led the crowd in chants.
Could you imagine if black people did that?
Oh my God. There would be snipers on the roof of the
truly.
Building.
Truly. The first beer can, that person would have a bullet in their head.
Uh-huh. Before it even hit the ground.
Yeah.
As Caludi went on, this crowd got more and more riled up and more drunk.
Well, he's coming with those hits.
Yeah, exactly. You know? They were getting very excited by what was being said because he was saying what they were already thinking and they loved it. And things quickly spiraled out of control, shockingly. But I think now is a good time to take a little break.
Okay.
before we get really into the thick of it.
I am excited.
All right. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Hey, this is Brandon from Peculiar Picture Show, the podcast that talks about movies, maladies, and mental health.
And this is Maria, also from that podcast.
So we were wondering, do you like movies? Do you like mental health?
Oh boy, do I ever, Brandon.
Well then, I've got a podcast for you. Peculiar Picture Show is the podcast for you because it is about movies and mental health.
That's right. We use movies to talk about mental health issues like borderline personality disorder, social issues like systemic racism, and other things.
Like how bad Shakespeare in Love was.
Yeah, sometimes we just talk about how bad the movie is.
And we really talked about that one. But sometimes we have games. Maria used to be a teacher, and so she loves to quiz people.
I really do.
So check us out online at peculiarpicture.show. That's our website, and you can stream all episodes there.
Or you can find us on any major podcast channel.
Let's dive right back into this bullshit. So Giuliani riled up the crowd, got him good and fucking liquored up and like crazed.
So he's like, who is he at this point?
A failed mayoral candidate.
Wow.
And former lawyer.
Shameful. Okay.
I don't know why he was there, why he was invited. I don't fully understand why he was invited.
Well,
but I'm sure that he ran.
He saw an opportunity.
Yeah. I'm sure that when he ran in 1989, he was the darling of the NYPD and that they didn't want Dinkins. And the next mayoral election was in 93. So he was fixing to run again in 92.
Trying to get against his name back out there.
Exactly. So I'm sure that the higher-ups in the NYPD saw that he was running again against Dinkins, knew that he was the law and order candidate.
Wink.
So he, you know, Phil Caruso set him up, but Giuliani knocked him down.
Yeah.
And these guys were
Alley-oop.
Like, yeah, they were ready for war after this. So at 10:50 a.m., a few officers started chanting, "Take the hall, take the hall." And they pushed over barriers in front of City Hall, and the on-duty officers who were in charge of protecting City
They're
Hall.
They're like, come on in, friends. Mm-hmm.
Did absolutely nothing.
Of course.
Moved the barriers out of the way for them.
Insurrection all over again.
Exactly.
Make yourself at home. Do you need any refreshments?
Well, the thing is, this is the first one. This is the first insurrection. Giuliani made it happen.
Yeah.
So I feel like that he gave Trump the blueprints, essentially. Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, I know. These off-duty officers just stood there, and some of them even cheered them on as thousands of off-duty officers poured through the barriers and ran up the steps of City Hall. People inside started to worry. One man said, "I was getting concerned that they're going to storm the building." I mean, these fucking guys are crazy. At one point, guards inside the building let a woman in who was right up against the door. She may have been a widow of a fallen officer, but either way, they let her in and they bolted the doors behind her. And then the people outside started screaming that they had arrested her, which was not true. And a mob like freaked out and rushed the building. A reporter said, "In all my years there, with lots and lots of demonstrations, it is the only time I ever remember the cops slamming the door shut and putting the bars across the doors to keep anyone from getting in. It is also the only time I remember feeling any sense of fear inside City Hall." Some officers started climbing up on cars that were parked in front of the building, jumping on them, smashing in the lights, jumping up and down, denting the hoods and the roofs, just random parked cars.
Property damage.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, think of the property.
But what about
the damage?
The CVS?
Did they touch Dwayne Reed, though?
Nope. Dwayne Reed was fine. Well, as far as I know.
No harm,
it was
no
fine.
Foul.
It's fine. Yeah, these were private citizens' cars.
Yeah.
Thankfully,
as long as they didn't touch Citibank.
I know. Thankfully, the doors of City Hall did hold. But then the crowd was kind of just stuck there, and that energy had to go somewhere. So the chance of take the hall changed to take the bridge, take the bridge. So at 11:40 a.m., the sea of officers turn away from City Hall and run towards the Brooklyn Bridge, which is just a few yards away.
They didn't run.
Yeah, no, they did not
run. I don't
run.
See them. They're not running folk.
Yeah. Yet again, on-duty officers in charge of controlling the crowd instead just opened up the barricades and ushered them through. Within 10 minutes, the bridge was blocked in both directions with more than 2,000 officers on both roadways. At one point, a New York Times photographer was surrounded and shoved and punched in the back.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
A Times photographer.
What a piece. These people are the worst.
A police lieutenant came over and told him that he should just leave. He said, I can't protect you up here. Like, that's your job. But
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A Times reporter was kicked in the stomach. A black cameraman for CBS was repeatedly called the N-word by the crowd. And then a bunch of officers on the bridge decided that it wasn't enough to just block traffic, that they needed to start harassing the drivers trapped on the roadway.
The ones who are paying their salaries?
Yes, correct? Exactly. Okay. Those, the cool, same, cool, cool. The very same ones.
Cool, cool, cool.
They mocked a woman who was trying to get across the bridge because she needed to care for a sick child.
Oh, what?
She was begging to be let through, and they told her that she should call the police.
Okay.
Gotcha.
They're so funny.
Uh-huh. A black city councilwoman said that officers surrounded her car, basically saw that there was a black driver in this car.
Yeah, they're like, it's party time.
Yeah, surrounded her car and started shaking it and rocking it, terrifying both her and the elderly passenger she had in the back seat.
Oh, no.
And back at City Hall, things were looking pretty much exactly the same. One officer in a BPA t-shirt saw a female TV reporter and shouted, here, let me grab your ass. Just let me get a handful. Like, with cameras rolling. Cool, guys. Good for you.
Yeah, they're just New York's finest.
Mm-hmm. The next day, an article came out in Newsday that opened with the line, they had beer and they wore guns and they all thought it was great to be young and drunk and ignorant. He's not wrong.
Yeah, this was like
the fact that they brought guns with them too, like off duty with beer, just wearing guns, no big deal.
They're white men.
Yeah.
This is their world.
Exactly. There, I have several quotes from this article. This guy was really not pleased by what happened that day.
Was pleased by what happened that day?
Well, a lot of people were.
A lot of people were. The drunk cops.
Yeah. He, throughout this article, kept calling them a suburban horde and talking about how they belonged in Bethpage, Long Island.
So accurate.
Yeah. They put it right out in the sun yesterday in front of City Hall. We have a police force that is openly racist. They broke through police barriers.
Where have you been, girl?
I know.
Where have you been?
I feel like in 1992, people were like, it was a different reality. They just realized that racism was like a problem.
That's so crazy. But then again, there are people who are realizing that today. Again, we don't learn history in this country at all.
Until it's forced in your face. And I think 1992 was very similar to 2020 with, you know, all the demonstrations for racial justice across the country. It was a very similar year. And look how much we gained from it. So he said they broke through police barriers as the uniformed police on duty stepped out of the way and violated their oath to protect this city. This suburban horde in t-shirts rushed to the front of City Hall and began to pound cars and jump on them, placing large dents in a Chevrolet parked right in front of the steps.
Wow.
They drained cans of beer and pushed and screamed and shook their fists in the air and shoved people and kicked them and threatened them.
Oh my God. Wow.
Some waved toilet plungers and others held
up
a sign.
Where did they get this?
They brought plungers with them because their friend had a sign that said, dump the washroom attendant.
They're so dumb.
I know.
That's really
such
sad.
Such a weak insult, too.
Yeah.
The cops held up several of the most crude drawings of Dinkins, black, performing perverted sex acts.
What?
Yeah.
They're artists now?
Yeah, apparently.
Okay.
Apparently, this author had been in Crown Heights during the riots between the Hasidic community and the black community and had actually gotten beat up when he was reporting on that. And the cops recognized him and started making fun of him. Like, how did you like the N-words beating you up in Crown Heights? Started screaming this to him and said, now you got an N-word right inside City Hall. How do you like that? An N-word mayor.
Mm.
Another article quoted a young black transit police officer who arrived downtown after the protest devolved into a full-blown riot.
Yeah.
He said in this article, the whole thing was, quote, right out of the 1950s, a drunk, racist lynch mob storming City Hall and coming in here to get themselves an N-word.
Yeah.
And that young officer's name was Eric Adams.
Really?
Our mayor, current mayor. Yes. Hmm. In the article, he said, We have been saying for years that the police department is comprised of racist Long Islanders who come into the city by day and leave at night with their arrogant attitudes and believing that they are above the law. Well, finally, the entire city was able to see what we've been talking about.
He's still not going to make them
I'm going to talk about that later on. A lot of mayoral candidates in the election last year were pushing to make it a law that you had to live inside the city limits to become a member of the NYPD. Several, I think six candidates endorsed this, making this law. Mm-hmm. Eric Adams was not one of them.
No, that's why he's here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So police at the scene finally called for backup, but it took 90 minutes before backup showed up. And by that point, most of these dudes were leaving by then. They'd run on their rampage. Things kind of played out the way they were going to play out. They held up their racist sign and they shook the cars and they dented the cars. And then they were kind of done. There was nowhere to go from there. So by the time backup showed up, things were kind of over.
Okay.
But as they were on their way out, many of these officers were shit-faced and just continued to harass people on their way home. Keep in mind, they're off duty. They're in plain clothes. They're wearing jeans and t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So people who are like riding the subway in the middle of the afternoon don't know that these are police officers. They just like look like drunk white bros. Yeah. You know what I mean? On the J train, a young black man accidentally stepped on an officer's shoe.
Uh-oh.
And the officer tried to punch him. Mm-hmm. And this man pulled out a razor to defend himself. And that's when he was jumped by six officers who kicked him and beat the shit out of him and broke his jaw.
Wow.
In the days after the riot, there was outrage from both politicians and the media. A Times columnist wrote they used racist language.
Outrage, though? That's so interesting. I'm surprised.
Dinkins was not happy for that's course, for sure.
But
New York is a progressive city, even back then. It was rare by the 90s, rare for a Republican to win an election as mayor. So I think people at least wanted to think that they were better than this, that this was out of the ordinary.
That they weren't Americans?
Yeah, I mean, fair. New York is sort of different a little bit. I think
I've been called the N-word so many times in New York.
I'm not saying that racism doesn't exist in New York City at
but
all.
I guess it's less than Ohio.
Yeah, I think there are a lot more progressive people living here who don't want to think that it is the same as Ohio. I think that they would be less shocked by this happening in Ohio than they would in New York City.
Yeah.
Everything that was sort of like the outrage against this, everything made a point to mention the fact that these were people from Long Island and not from New York City.
Oh, that's wrong.
Yeah. So a Times columnist wrote, they used racist language, they carried racist signs and called the mayor an N-word. Nearly a third of New York City's police officers live on Long Island, and some of them like to congratulate themselves on getting out of the hellhole they are sworn to protect. After reviewing footage of this riot, a visibly angry Mayor Dinkins came out and said that if this is how these officers act in front of TV cameras, quote, I fear how they would behave when they were out in the streets.
I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know how they act when they're out in the streets, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of your job to know how they act?
Well, I think that he had a really hard time as the first black mayor of not trying to bring race into things. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He wanted to act shocked by this.
Fair.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That this is not how things go.
No.
Yeah. Never. Never. Not in New York City.
This is new.
So Dinkins said that he held the PBA president, Phil Caruso, responsible for intentionally inciting his members' actions. And Caruso agreed that things had gotten a little out of hand.
Oh, wow. A little out of hand?
A little out of hand.
Just a little.
But insisted that the officer's anger was understandable.
Oh.
He said, you don't treat these guys with respect.
What?
When you create a civilian complaint review board, which is going to challenge everything they do, it's just going to respond to black whining.
Oh.
Black whining.
Black whining, yeah.
Complaining about being murdered in the street for no reason. It's just black whining.
Just black whining. It's not like they're public servants or anything. No. They're only serving the white citizens.
Exactly.
Obviously.
Black people don't pay taxes. What are you talking about?
They're not real citizens. They're not real people.
I mean, No, a lot of people still believe that to this day.
Yeah, I mean, we are living through the Reconstruction. Like, that, why is that not news every day? The fact that they are taking away the right to vote for Black people.
Daily, yeah.
Every single day.
So Mayor Dinkins also accused Giuliani, who was, again, just about to run for mayor again the following year. Of intentionally egging on protesters and inciting a riot for political reasons.
Imagine that.
I know. He said that he's clearly an opportunist. He's seizing upon a fragile circumstance in our city for his own political gain.
Mm.
Giuliani called the mayor's remarks desperate and offensive.
Oh, offensive.
Offensive.
He's offensive.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He said that Dinkins was the one who was trying to use what happened for political gain by making everything about race.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes.
He said, The real question is, has the relatively minor occurrence of racial epithets, if they occurred at all?
Oh, if they occurred at
Girl,
all.
Girl, we have the receipts. We have the footage. Play what? The tapes.
Wow.
If they occurred at all, been made the major focus of this rally for political purposes?
What?
That Dinkins was just saying that it was racist because he wanted sympathies.
Okay.
I mean, deny.
Yeah, deny. Yeah.
He was writing the playbook. This is the.
Yeah. Because I say it, it's true.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I ask it, it's a real question.
He insisted that these officers weren't racists. They were just frustrated by a mayor who didn't have their back. One of the reasons these police officers...
It's called a civilian review board. Like, can we just talk about that it's called a civilian review board? Why are there cops on it?
I don't make sense.
You want a cop review board, cool. But it's called a civilian review board.
So he said, one of the reasons these police officers might have lost control is that we have a mayor who invites riots. The mayor never, like, was telling people to riot. He just had a little bit of sympathy for a man's family after he was murdered by police for no fucking reason.
This is very New York.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if people know this, but, like, New York tried to secede from the Union.
I think I've heard this story.
Yeah, they wanted to keep slavery here.
Oh, of course, because our financial, like, the whole city was built on
They voted against it, but they wanted it. I mean, bankers and things. Yeah,
of course.
But it's like, this is New York City. This is our history. Yeah. This has always been who we are.
Home sweet home.
I mean, yeah.
So when asked why the department didn't do more to control the crowd, the police commissioner, Ray Kelly.
Oh, no.
He was just,
Ray Kelly?
He was like just coming in. He was like acting police officer or police commissioner at this point.
Oh, yes. This was just the 90s. So yeah.
Yeah. He was just coming into his career at this point.
Whoa.
People who don't live in New York probably won't know who Ray Kelly is, but he's a fucking piece of shit.
He's the worst.
Yeah.
And I'm sure after he's like dead and gone, his sons or something.
I mean, yeah. The Kelly dynasty.
Yeah. That's always how it is.
So Ray Kelly said that the size and the energy of the protest had just caught the department by surprise. They just didn't expect so many people to show up. They only had like 300 officers down there that day to like control the crowd of 10,000 drunken white men. But so he said that, you know, the department was just caught by surprise, but promised a full investigation to determine if any protesters had broken the law. As if drinking in the streets and beating up reporters and smashing up cars was not against the law.
But they're cops. What
we,
law?
We got to find out if anybody broke the law.
Let's look into this. We're going to do our own research on this.
Less than 14 days later, Kelly issued this fucking milquetoast-ass 13-page report.
13-page?
13-page.
Wow.
It never mentions Giuliani's participation at all. Not once.
Whoa.
It said that while some officers were seen drinking, that none were observed to be drunk. And it called the department's failure to protect the Brooklyn Bridge a tactical error.
Sounds like the NYPD.
Yes. Out of the 10,000 officers there, despite that the fact that there was video footage of this, the police department was only able to identify 87 officers. And just 42 of them faced any disciplinary charges, and only 2 officers were suspended.
Nothing to see here. Nothing happened.
It's fine. Political pundits at the time speculated that these out-of-control cops had essentially guaranteed Dinkins would win the next election, that they had handed him the election. Everyone was writing, like,
really?
Giuliani doesn't have a chance. Look at this fucking lunatic incited a riot. These police are out of control. Dinkins clearly has this in the bag. No big deal. Saying Giuliani had badly damaged his political career and would never have a job
there.
In politics.
He wasn't there. What are you talking about?
I know.
He wasn't there.
Giuliani leaned into his involvement in the riot and pushed the narrative that...
Law and order.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Pushed the narrative that by calling out racist behavior within the department, Dinkins was just playing the race card.
Yep.
But to anyone with functioning eye holes at this point could see that race was exactly what this was all about. One high-ranking black officer told Newsday, "This rally wasn't about the CCRB or about Washington Heights. It's about race."
Of course.
"It's about white cops who don't live in our city. It's about white cops who don't want any part of a black mayor and will never accept a black mayor."
It's about white cops who joined the force so they could hurt non-whites.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's the Klan. The end.
The end. And this man was absolutely right. And Giuliani knew that all he needed to do to win the election was to convince white voters that they would be safer with him as mayor. And on election day in 1993...
Law and order, they're code words.
Yeah, exactly.
For safety, safe streets.
Some say it's a code word.
Well, it is a code word for freedom from fear of browns and blacks.
Oh my God. On election day in 1993, Giuliani's campaign hired off-duty cops and firemen to, quote, monitor black election districts for voter fraud.
Of course.
Literally writing out the playbook step at a time.
Again, we're living through Reconstruction.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to make sure that we're not allowed to vote comfortably or we're afraid to vote because there's cops there.
Yeah. And these were off-duty cops that Giuliani's campaign hired, but Ray Kelly came in with the assist and sent 3,500 uniformed officers to the city's polling places, despite objections from the Dinkins campaign, who said that it would intimidate Democratic voters.
Yeah, that's so, so American.
Yeah.
God, wow, this story is, this is who we are.
It's foundational, absolutely. Yeah. It's like...
We've always been.
Yeah. It feels...
It doesn't take much to scare white people.
No, exactly. It feels so...
I mean, scare the national identity.
It feels like this could have happened yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
But this was 30 years ago.
It's so sad.
Giuliani won the election by 50,000 votes in a city with a population at the time of over 7 million people. A teeny tiny margin.
Yeah.
So... I'm sure there were people that were intimidated out of voting by these fucking cops everywhere swarming the polling sites.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's why they did it.
Absolutely.
That's how you win when you keep people from voting.
Absolutely. And on election night at his victory party, he thanked the NYPD for helping him win.
Yeah. Oh, that's so sad.
In 2013, in his memoir, Mayor Dinkins said that he lost re-election because of, quote, racism, pure and simple. So that's the story of the City Hall riot and basically the beginning of that Italian-American goblin's political career.
Yeah.
Here we are today, almost 30 years later. We just elected our second black mayor in New York City's 350-year history. And Eric Adams was there. He saw the riots firsthand.
Yeah.
In a recent interview, he compared the City Hall riot to the insurrection at the Capitol and said, "Imagine the symbol of this. Here you had the first black mayor, the chief executive of the city. And they basically said, we don't care who you are if you're black."
Yeah.
I do believe that Eric Adams wants to reform or at least improve the NYPD. Yeah. And I believe that he can do it. But let's not forget that he was a cop himself. He was a member of the NYPD for over 20 years until 2006.
Yeah.
According to his own website, his plan for reforming the NYPD is to increase diversity within the force and single out bad cops. That's the plan.
Which is nothing.
Nothing.
But that's how you get elected.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how you get scared white people to vote for
you. Yeah. He says that he's motivated to, quote, get the racist cops out and lift up and bring in those cops that are doing a good job. Because if we accomplish that...
There'd be six cops left.
I mean, Come on. Yeah.
I mean, that's getting rid of the racist cops is getting rid of the cops.
The force, yeah. Because if we accomplish that, then we will have real public safety in our city.
I mean, yeah, I guess, but those are words.
Yeah, it's words. It sounds all well and good in theory, but it feels really naive and unrealistic in the face of the so-called blue wall of silence, where they will do anything to protect their brothers.
Yeah.
And a whole system that was basically designed to protect bad cops.
It was designed to reinforce white supremacy.
Yeah. And he should know that. He worked with this within
he
this system.
He knows that.
Yeah.
But he wants to be elected.
Exactly. And he was elected, and yeah, now he is the mayor.
You can't go against white supremacy and be elected in this country.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just can't. It's impossible.
Not at least to high office like that. Maybe as like a city council person you can.
Maybe.
I mean, we have socialist candidates who are doing very well,
yeah,
in smaller, more local, yeah, elections. A socialist would never win the race for mayor. Look at what happened to that woman that ran, that, yeah, won the primary in Buffalo as a socialist.
Oh, yeah.
A socialist black woman.
Yeah.
Won the primary election for Democratic mayor of Buffalo, New York, and the Democratic
power structure.
Yeah, power structure, the
neoliberal elite.
Yeah, they lost their shit, and when it came time for the actual election, they spent like millions of dollars on a campaign to encourage people to write in the old mayor, the, you know, Democratic sort of old standby.
Yeah.
And she lost. After winning the Democratic primary, she lost the election, and the old mayor was reelected.
Yeah, he kind of,
as a,
like,
write-in candidate.
He, like, dropped out, but he was never really out.
Yeah.
He just knew that he didn't want to face her in debates.
Oh, my
That's
God.
What he did.
But yeah.
He would have been crushed.
Bigger elections. So, yeah, we can't do that. But
no.
There are some candidates winning elections in New York, but not anything super meaningful.
Yeah, nothing's going to move the needle.
Yeah. Mayor Dinkins was able to push through the current all-civilian version of the CCRB before he left office, thankfully. It is
okay.
Now fully civilian and fully independent of the NYPD, but it was underfunded from the very start.
Of course.
By design,
yeah,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah, of course. There's going to be nothing.
Yeah.
They can't do anything.
Yeah.
The police are above the law.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Historically, the CCRB has had to close more than half of the complaints that come in without ever even investigating, because they just don't have the funding to investigate every complaint. The NYPD does not want accountability, and Eric Adams is one of their own.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll prove me wrong, but I'm not holding my breath. I don't have high hopes.
Yeah, I have no hopes because
yeah.
I know the history of this city.
Exactly.
And it's not good.
So that's it. That's my story.
That's a good one, though. I did not know anything about this riot that they pulled off.
City Hall riot. Yeah,
yeah.
Nobody fucking talks about this. There was like one random one-off article about
it. Yeah, it is very like... Yeah, the parallels to the insurrection.
It's wild.
It's just like everyone gets off and it's fine.
Mm-hmm. If the people who had been at the insurrection had been cops, none of them would be
you're right.
at all.
Like, but
there,
like,
are a lot of people that are going to jail
they're
now.
They're going
but
to jail
for like a year.
Yeah.
Like, I think the most I've seen is like 3 years for literally
trying to overthrow the government. You get 3 years?
You
should be under the jail. Like, it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone who breaks a window of like Chase Bank is in jail for 10 years.
Or murdered by a 17-year-old white boy from a different state. And everybody feels sorry for the white boy who murdered.
But look at him. Look at his skin color,
look
though.
His
sad
blubbering
eyes.
Crying on the stand when he doesn't even shed a single tear. He just... Oh, blah, 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 blah.
He was doing the things he was supposed
that
to
he
do.
That he needed to do.
Yeah. This is America.
This is America. Good times.
It's a great time. It's a great time to be alive and just see history repeat itself over and over again
and over
because
and over.
People are scared. Grow up.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny that we call ourselves the home of the brave. That to me is just so funny.
Yeah.
Because it's like... You're afraid of nothing.
The boogeyman. Single mothers and poor
people.
The welfare queen.
A fictional woman on TV. It's good to know these stories so we're less, I guess, less upset when they happen again and again and again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's just funny. When I read this, I was like, wait, what the fuck happened? Wait, And this is where Giuliani comes from?
Yeah, I know this is where, like, Giuliani comes from. I thought he just popped on the scene after 9/11. I didn't know that he was involved in this riot, riot.
He was like the fucking NYPD golden boy.
The worst.
I know.
Like,
I know.
Oh my God, but you're racist.
Can you imagine an alternate reality when if the fucking NYPD hadn't shown up to intimidate voters on that day, 50,000 people had changed the course of the election and Giuliani would never have had a political career?
I mean, we've never had democracy. Maybe one day we will. But they know what they need to do to keep power.
Kaludi Giuliani.
Kaludi Giuliani is just the worst. My drink is not empty yet.
I'm right there with you.
We're like halfway through. We've been tentatively drinking
terrified of this fucking drink.
Me too. And it's so good. Yeah. Like, it could have been gone. But I know that there are 4 ounces of alcohol in it. Yeah. So I have been sipping cautiously.
And that's the, like, scaled down version.
This cocktail should not exist. It is really irresponsible that they're giving this to children.
Yeah.
I had so many of these before I was 21.
That night that I'm remembering getting myself into trouble, I was 20.
Okay, so our drinks are almost empty, so I guess we're done.
Right? we're fucking done.
It's upsetting, but I'm glad that I know about this.
Yes, and in my head, when I was telling this story, I was only picturing Rudy Giuliani with his hair dye running down the side of his face.
I was picturing him, shaving?
Oh my God.
At the airport. Yeah. I couldn't fully watch that video. It made me so sad.
Yeah.
I'm like, this man, I just want someone to come and get him.
Yeah.
You know?
Feed him some soup.
Yeah. Like, where are your grandkids?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not fucking with you because you're you, but like, someone should be there with you. You should have some sort of aide who's being paid very well.
Absolutely.
to care for your ass.
Like, okay, Grandpa.
America's history is juicy. We just add all of the clear liquor.
Every liquor imaginable, yes.
We add a little bit of Coke, a little bit of Pepsi, you know, if you're into Pepsi, a little lemon. And oh my God, this drink is too smooth. So thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach. This has been Stephanie Domingo.
And Tux Lerzel.
Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. We could not do this without him. It would be reckless.
I would just throw my beer can at City Hall.
You would be jumping on top of a Chevrolet, yes, I believe.
Yes. Fuck this. Okay, guys.
I love it.
Bye.
Bye. Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on land belonging to the Lenape Nation. Please note we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone who you think would be into it. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop on beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We have exclusive content on Patreon where you can directly support the production of our show.